Hey, welcome back to Deeper Than Dough. Today, I'm joined by Alistair Sanderson, CEO of Opirio Group, a global manufacturing company generating over $100 million in annual sales. Alistair's entrepreneur journey started back in 2009 when he launched a small business that quickly pivoted into a machinery and rebranded as LFA Machines in 2010. Under his leadership, the company grew from earning just $3,900 in its first year to over $10 million by 2021. In this episode, Alistair shares what it's like to build a family-owned business, open offices around the world, and navigate acquisitions while balancing work and family life. We dive into cultural differences between the UK and the US, the power of community, and redefining success beyond material wealth. Alistair's story is packed with lessons on resilience, purpose, and perspective. This is one you don't want to miss out on. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Deeper Than Dough podcast. Today, I'm super excited to have Alistair Sanderson on the show. Alistair, welcome.
Hey, Bennett. How are you today?
Really good. I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah.
One, you got to tell us where your accent's from. And then two, give us just a minute or so of your background, who you are.
Yeah, so born in the UK, grew up just outside of Oxford in a village, which is not quite as quintessential as it sounds, although to a lot of Americans, it sounds like quite dreamy, right? We had 13 pubs and 7 churches. So like that kind of ratio of alcohol to religion. But a place called Kidlington is where I grew up. Yeah.
Awesome. And walk me through it. Kids, married, anything else about your background?
Yeah, the whole kit and caboodle. So a fantastic wife, very, very supportive wife, Alyssa, and then two kids, Daniel and Amelia. I've got 2 and 4, so boy and girl.
And how long have you lived in the States? Right now you're in Kansas City. How long have you been stateside?
Yeah, so I started coming to the States quite a lot around 2015, opened up a branch office over here in 2016, end of 2016, and then got a certain type of visa that allowed prolonged stays from 2018. So really kind of like started laying roots in 2018 and then met Alyssa, married, kids, and now I'm a green card holder. So I'd say kind of like it ramped up starting in 2015, but really 2018 was like the big move. I remember landing in Texas. So our head office is in Texas, right? And I didn't even go to like bed. I just went straight to the Toyota dealership and got the Tundra on order. Cause like, you know, it's what you need if you're going to be living in Texas.
You're in Texas, you need to
try. Yeah, right. Yeah. Welcome to the States.
I'm really interested to hear about the cultural differences between the UK and the United States when it comes to, when it comes to anything, whether it's raising a family, what are the pros and cons, friendships and the closest of that or business. You could go kind of wherever you want, but what are the pros and cons of living here versus there or vice versa?
I get a question actually that's not the same question, but I get this question a lot being somebody from the UK who lives in the United States. And the question basically sounds like this, like it's either what is the best thing about the United States or what do you love about being in the United States? And my default answer really overlaps with the same answer I give to you. And that is community. Like America has got this incredible sense of community. And I know that, you know, over the last few years, it's felt a little bit fractured in places, but I don't think people here really realize how embedded it is into our society. And it's just something that we don't have in the UK. And so I think that that's like a great thing. And I think that that's a great thing to bring up a family in. Family is super important to me. So in the States, you'll drive around the neighborhoods. And firstly, the neighborhoods are named, right? Like I live in Timber's Edge, right? Like, so you're already in like a community, but then you'll see like state level flags, you'll see school flags, you'll see, you know, American flags. In England, you don't drive around and just see like Union Jacks hanging off of people's houses. And so like there's this real sense of belonging and this sense of community that I just love about the States. And I think it's really healthy to bring up a family inside that kind of like bigger sense of community. So
And so take that and then times it by 50, and that's what you have in Utah.
Yeah, for sure, dude.
Because now I've lived in California and, you know, a handful of different cities and North Carolina and Chicago and moving around for sales. I never really know my neighbors. But when I grew up Mormon, LDS, I'm not even joking. The closest 200 houses, I knew every single person's last name. I'm like, that's brother this and this and that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, Anyways, for that, and I think it also translate, that community translates to a really good entrepreneurship environment, whether it's, I mean, anytime you have a good community, then you have the support.
You can build off of it, certainly.
Well, what's the flip side? What does the UK have better that you miss?
it descends into food at this point, as okay. It quite often does. I quite like these things called pork pies, which is basically like a short crust pastry around a ball of meat. I don't know how else to describe it, but a big fan of pork pies. The other thing, and you're in effectively confectionery, right? Like you're in the dough business, right? But they have something in the UK called a crumpet.
Okay.
And America, you need the crumpet.
We'll bring crumpets to dirty doughs.
It's so good. So it's like a breakfast food. It's halfway between a pancake and like an English scone. It goes in the toaster and it has like delicious little holes for butter to melt into. You guys would love it. Like it's everything you like about life. It's carbohydrates. It's super simple and it tastes great.
Carbohydrates and butter.
Yeah.
I discovered that when I was older. I was like, man, my mom's such a good cook. And then I'm like, watching her cook as I'm older, I'm like, oh, you just use a lot of butter.
Yeah, right. My
you
father
just put three times as much as butter on the egg, and that's why they taste good. So what about business though? What were you doing in the UK from a professional standpoint, and what are you doing now?
Yeah, so I sell machinery. I sell industrial machinery to food and pharmaceutical manufacturers predominantly. And I was doing that in the United Kingdom. And the thing about selling industrial machinery is if you get good at it, it's not like a, you know, cookie store. You can't open up another one 10 miles down the road and have the same level of success. You have to go a lot further. And so our second location that we opened was in the US. And the US is such a strong economy. Again, this is like one of the real benefits for living here. I don't know that everybody fully understands how lucky we are that we just hit the lottery by being in this country. And so the office over here just exploded. Even in comparison to the UK, it was like within 6 to 12 months, it was 5-6 times bigger.
So yeah. What's the why that's driving you?
Me as an individual, it's always been family. First, that was in my brother. My brother and I started the business together, and it was very much a we why, right? Like we together wanted to go out and do a bunch of things together. In fact, we set our initial core values for the business very much around like us supporting each other, bettering ourselves, learning together, growing together, right? Like that was our why, and those were our values around that. And now that I've got my own family and he's got his own family, I think that family element's still very much there for us, but it's kind of maybe not so much for each other as it is that kind of growing, our growing community, our growing kind of like network around ourselves.
So what does that look like? Because I say the same thing, and I said the same thing 3 years ago when I didn't even, you know, I was just putting my head down, working, overweight, just not a great relationship, but I'm like, It's going to be worth it for my family, right? If I could just sacrifice all the time that I have with them right now, I maybe could have some future with them, whatever. And I kind of went through that and then felt a lot of emptiness after I sold my first company. Cause I'm like, man, I sacrificed all this family time when I was doing it with my family, but it's like, I'm not doing it for them cause I just sacrificed them. And then I made a very hard rule on like, okay, no, not working past four, not working weekends. Like it doesn't matter. I'm actually going to start trying to put this first. Are there any actionable or tips or tricks on like, okay, family's the most important, but if you've been in the US or anywhere, you know, people just work themselves to death for a greater cause. That's not really a greater, you know, it's disguised as family. It's really just because I like working and I want to stay busy.
Yeah. It's such a hard thing that I think a lot of people kind of really wrestle with, especially working mums. Right. Like my wife's a super professional. She's really, really smart, really crazy talented woman. And as we had kids come into the world, we both wrestled with this kind of concept in different ways. Right. Because she was going on her career path and we were having to make decisions about what that looked like. I was going on my career path. We had to make decisions about what that looked like. I don't think we also have this like horrible thing that where we're like, oh, we'll achieve work-life balance, right? Like this like unobtainable kind of like concept. And for me personally, you know, it's difficult to get that balance. I think trying to strive for it. So being okay with the fact that there are going to be what I feel like are sprints in life. right? But yep. acknowledging that it's a sprint and acknowledging that you can't sprint forever is like super important to me. So like if I'm doing an M&A transaction, because we've gone through a roll up, so we're swallowing in businesses quite quickly, right? On the run up to that, I'll have like a crazy 6 month sprint and I'll be doing what looks like from the outside, a very unbalanced thing. Like it's just, it wouldn't be sustainable over the long period, you know, standardly 12-hour days traveling most weeks kind of thing, right? And that, you couldn't look at that and objectively say I was putting my family first. But I do that for that period in the acknowledgement that the next period will come afterwards. And then that'll be like majorly reduced in that workload. And then understanding that that second period has its own frustrations around it. Right. Like actually sitting on the floor reading like truck Jeep to my 2-year-old son for like the fourth time in the row is also not like in the moment, like necessarily yeah. the most enjoyable thing. But like just appreciating that moment for what it is and then appreciating the sprint for what it is as well. That's kind of what that's where I'm at on those things.
I like it. I've implemented the sprints as well. Not a 6 month sprint. I'll do it's like, shoot, I need 200 grand or we're going under and I got 2 weeks to find it. So baby, you probably aren't going to see me that much. Like those are my sprints when I'm like back against the wall. Other than that, I'm like, I've looked at my past. I only started business 2020. Yeah. 5 years ago, next month. Wow. And I started a solar company 18 months. Is quick and I sold it. And then Dirty Dough bought it, sold 400 franchises, opened up 100 and sold that. And then I'm looking back on it and I did do those sprints. And there's no question here. This is just just having a conversation. I'm looking back on it and I'm like, okay, if I didn't do the sprints, what would I have achieved? And I'm very convinced that if I didn't do the sprints, maybe my valuation would have been a little bit lower, but how does that affect my day-to-day life? I don't think it would have evolved. So now I'm like, next time I'm trying to do better at determining like what value is this extra work going to actually provide me? You know, if is it going to take me from 10 million to 11 million? Cause if it does, like who cares, right? Like does your lifestyle doesn't change at all. So any feedback on that thought process?
Yeah. So, I think it's an important thing to acknowledge. I've had what I would describe as a bunch of small exits. So like I've exited a business, but never like a multi-million dollar exit, right? So I've not had that moment of like opening a bank account and being like, whoa, what the hell is going on there, right? But I think it's important to, but personally, I do think it's important to acknowledge like, if you're not going to fly around in your private jet or live on a, you know, 200,000, you know, acre farm somewhere, actually the threshold for happiness is probably a lot lower than people think it is.
Yeah.
Right. And actually how much happiness do you get from the private jet and the farm? I don't know. I'll probably never experience it, but I'm kind of okay with that. Like I'm very okay with that.
I mean, I was telling you right before the call, I went to Kansas for a day two or so weeks ago and it was on a private jet. I didn't pay for it, but the dude, I mean, it cost him 20 grand to go there and back in a day, you know? And it's just versus, I mean, he even told me himself, because we were talking, and somebody else was like, oh, I've looked at a jet, but it never pencils in. And the guy who owns the jet, he goes, it'll never pencil.
Yeah.
It'll never pencil. If you're trying to pencil it, it just doesn't make sense. Because he's like, it's so easy. Like, okay, I can get a nice first class ticket to anywhere and pay 10% less than what I'm at, you know, but it's for the freedom. Cause he's like, and then you get the jet and then you want to make money off of it. Cause I turn everything into business, just how all of us do. Right.
Yeah.
But, and then you're renting out over Thanksgiving and then you have a last second thing in Thanksgiving and that's when you want to hop on your jet and it's gone and there's no point. So, anyway, that's the handful of times I've been on a jet. I do feel like I'm like, okay, there's literally nothing different other than like, I get to take a picture and I, you know, if I wanted to smoke on here, they let me.
On the plane, yeah.
I'm just joking. I don't think they'll let you smoke.
I don't smoke and I'm not on social media. So like maybe private flights, not for me. Maybe I'll stick with American.
but I do agree. I mean, there's a Tony Robbins book and he takes you through what it is to like have the perfect life and then how to put that in like a dollar amount. And he's like, you don't buy a private jet, but you can pay for a private jet, like charter it, right? And then you're looking at it, you're like, oh, I only need XYZ amount to really live that perfect life. But a lot of times we don't define it. I think I did that as far as like, what's my goal? You set a goal and it's a material goal, hoping that that material goal allows you to achieve an emotional goal. Because at the end of the day, who cares what we have? It's how we feel. And I think that's, you know, very evident in anything. Like, I'll give you $1 million and you're going to feel like shit every day, or I'm going to give you $5. You continue to live. But for whatever reason, every morning, you're just going to be super happy and stoked to be alive. Everybody's going to take that, right? So we know we're after the emotional, but yet our goals aren't emotional based. It's, I just want the jet. It's material based, not defining what the jet's going to bring us.
Yeah. I don't know that everyone would take that though. I think there are loads of people that are just like, nah, probably loads of people listening to this podcast that are like, nah, I'm taking the $1 million. I'll deal with feeling like heck every morning for however.
Really? Okay, let me think on that again.
Because there are, like, I think it's different maybe for you and I, right? Where you get to a level of comfort and you understand. Do you see what I mean? But we've worked our way up Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, we're not worried. I'm assuming you're not worried about your Costco bill. Right. And so, like, if you're in a situation where you are, like, that $1 million probably feels like it fixes a lot of pain. Do you know what I mean? It probably.
Yeah, but let me rephrase it. You get as much as money as you want, but you feel like shit every day, all day. You know what I mean? Or you don't get anything, but like, what was the point of that? Why do you want money?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't feel like crap. But I guess if you're saying, if you're down there enough of like, oh crap, I'm not paying rent.
Yeah.
I agree with you then. If I'm a dad and I have the pressure of my family and my wife and the outside society, like, you need to care for your family, I'll be like, I'll feel like shit if I can
take care. I'll feel like hell if I can pay for my family, if I can look after my kids, I'll pay like hell. In some ways, I guess that's the sacrifice that like a lot of working people make, right?
But even then, it's like, I will feel like hell because I feel like that's what I need to do, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that's my responsibility. And I do think that kind of leads me back to, we're all after an emotional state. Nobody cares to have a physical thing. We want physical things to achieve an emotional state.
Yeah.
So then if you have your goals, like my goal was $1 million before 30. And then that I just like,
did you make
that's
it?
What I'm going to get. And I achieve all my goals. So I achieve it. And then I'm like, then what though? Like, I was supposed to feel amazing and I felt the same. I didn't feel bad. I felt great, but it wasn't anything different. And it's like, literally no difference in my life at all, except for I realized that I got up to 310 pounds and I was just super fat. And I didn't have a great relationship. And that's kind of, you know, where I'm coming from on this. Do you have a definition of success? You know, if you fast forward 2, 3, 5 years, whatever, like, what does that look like on a?
Yeah. So my brother and I do these retreats together because my brother and I are in business together. So we do these retreats every year together and we do this process that we call start at the end. And we actually detail like what our perfect life would look like. Like we want to be able to go on a holiday with the grandkids to our second home, right? We're okay flying commercial, not private, but we also want to be able to pay for college tuition for our, you know, whatever. Do you know what I mean? So like we do this process where we're like, where do we kind of want to get to? And it, these conversations that we have, it often centers around family. It centers around time spent with family. And then we kind of back into a material number that we think will make it, that will allow us to achieve that. And actually, it's been quite interesting watching the process happen because we've done them now. I think we started them in 2016. So we must have been doing
that. Are you saying you're hosting these retreats or you're an
attendee? My brother and I just self-host the retreat. We just get like an Airbnb.
Just you two. Okay, just, awesome. Yeah, I love it.
We get an Airbnb. So this is the process. We get this Airbnb. We tend to do it like Lake of the Ozarks, Lake Bled in Slovenia, like Bali. Like we tend to try and get somewhere that's like naturally beautiful and has like a lot of outdoor space. And then we'll just rent an Airbnb and we turn up with like one of those massive post-it note things. We just start sticking paper on the wall and like getting creative with the pens and getting our ideas up. And one thing that I've noticed, we've been doing it since about 2016. So we're about 8 years into it. That number has come down. It hasn't gone up. Like, so we've been diverging on the number. Like as we're like working our process and we kind of track our, what we consider to be our net wealth, like that number's coming up. And then the number we feel that we need is like coming down. It's an interesting thing.
Do you think it's coming down? I'm reading a book right now. It's focusing a lot on like, one of the big problems with society is everybody's on this pursuit of happiness, right? Yeah. Because it's a pursuit, you have to get something. And when you're saying I'm on a pursuit of happiness, it's typically in anybody's mind, it's I need to get enough things around me manipulate my environment enough to then have what I want. Where he's like, well, that'll never work. It's never worked for anybody. It just will never work. If it's external, it's not going to work. It has to be internal. So do you think there's some correlation, like as you get more mature, older, and you're like, oh, I'm focusing a little bit more internally, less externally, and that's what's driving the number down? Any correlation there or any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there could be correlation there. There's also, I think, like the distinct realization that it's not a destination.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Like, I think if what you're trying to do is to find your end state happiness as a destination, you really, there's a fundamental flaw because we're on a journey and it ends one day, you know, right? But it doesn't end in a destination. It ends in termination. Like it ends, it's a very terminal finite point, right? And everything until that point is that journey. And I think that's probably more the realization, and that probably drives the number down quite a lot. Because I do remember sitting there and like on the first one, we were discussing things like cars and houses and, you know, those kind of things. And now the discussion has changed much more to time spent, holidays, vacations, and you can get a lot of ski vacations for the price of a Ferrari. Like you just like, you know, I know that Park City's like price has gone up a bit, but like, it's not that crazy.
you mentioned working with your brother.
Yeah.
Have you guys been in business since the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. So I was going through this kind of crazy time in my life. It was quite disruptive. It was definitely a change moment. And I found myself back at home with mum and dad when at a time that a lot of kids probably are, right? Like I was 21, 22. So that kind of boomerang thing, you know, I'd left and come back again. And my brother was 18 at the time and was probably getting ready to fly the nest for the first time. And he was just like, mate, I've got a lot of faith in you. I think we can go out and do something together. Like, let's hit it together. Let's go work something out together. And so
this was, you said he's 18, you're 21, 22. And that's when you guys, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think my brother had one other job once working for Domino's for like 3 days. And I think that's the only other job he's ever had.
Wow.
And then I had like a handful of other jobs as I was growing up. But yeah, predominantly most of my working life has been self-employed entrepreneur.
I want to tackle that more specifically, you working with your brother, because you hear this, don't do business with family. You know, I have 8 siblings and I think I've done business with all of them. I owned the solar company with a brother. I own a few real estate properties with one. I bought Dirty Dough with another one. And anyways, I've really enjoyed it, but I think it's how, what's the key to success? And do you recommend it to other people? That's my question.
Yeah. So I think what has made my brother and I successful is a massive amount of respect for each other's skill sets, which we acknowledge are very different, right? So, like, I think that that's the first thing. I have a profound amount of respect for him. I believe he has a profound amount of respect for me. And so that allows us to be able to make decisions independently of one another in the trust that the other person is going to be okay with it. And I genuinely trust him to make decisions that I know to be in his area of expertise. So I think that just really helps, right? We're not second guessing each other. We're not questioning each other's decisions. And then the other thing is like, just like mum and dad, right? Like when you do have a disagreement, keep it private, dude. Like do not air that dirty laundry in front of the rest of the team. Like go away as a group, get united over what the decision is going to be, and then come back to the table and like, that's the decision. Right. And so we've also always been really good at that because it does happen. There will be disagreements. Right. But I think if you layer in respect and layer in dealing with those disagreements in private, especially if you're both owners in the business. Right. I think that can actually facilitate like a really healthy business environment and a really healthy working relationship. I agree with all of that.
I got very lucky with my solar business. I wouldn't have gone into business unless it was my brother, because I was just knocking doors selling. And he's like, why don't you do this online? I was like, I don't know how to, or I don't know anything about business. But he's 13 years older than me and has been in business for 20 something years, and got very lucky for that. So I'm very grateful for that. But I'm also, we did a 50-50 partnership, which I've since learned that that's like the second killer of businesses outside of finances, because then there's not anybody, it's not about the equity. It's about the decision and the ability to to resolve an argument, I guess, or resolve a path going forward. But luckily it went, and I think a lot of that was the respect. Do you feel like you grew up with that respect due to parenting, or is this something like, no, it's when we were adults and we started working together, and then I really got to appreciate his skills. How did that respect develop?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I don't have any older brothers. I'm the eldest sibling. I had a very kind of probably more of a protective parental relationship with my brother, and my brother probably had one of the younger sibling looking up towards an older sibling, you know, kind of like imitation when we were growing up, which is natural in kids, right? So I think that was more like that, but it was a more sibling relationship. Now it's definitely a very professional, respectful relationship. I think that grew over time, actually. So we've done a bunch of businesses together. This isn't the first one. We've had a few different businesses, and some have imploded and some have gone okay. This is definitely the one that's had the longest legs on it. And we also had a business with friends once. There were two friends on that side and my brother and I on the other side. We used to joke that it was 50-50-50, you know, but it wasn't. It was 50-50. They owned 25% each and we owned 25% each. And actually, we ended up in the same landlock that you just discussed earlier.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't a true 50-50, we would never not side with the other half, right? So we knew we were in deadlock. And it caused a lot of trouble. It causes a lot of trouble. It can be really damaging 50-50 to a business. I would highly recommend against it.
Yeah. I mean, I show up to the startup course right after I sell my first company for, you know, and I'm stoked about it. And he, you know, like, what am I going to learn? And he throws up a cap table and it has two partners and it's, you know, I think there's two sets of caps tables. One says, you know, 50-50 and the other one said 25-25-25-25. And he goes, what's the problem? And everybody's looking at the names and the amount of shares and he's like, no, it's that they can't make decisions, which is just, again, until you've heard it, I never knew that. So anyways, I like that advice. It sounds like you do as well.
I think that probably goes back, sorry to interrupt, but no, that probably goes back to what I was saying earlier as well, right? Like my brother and I are 50-50, but like we respect each other to make those decisions and we know where those decision lines fall intuitively. And I think that's what allows it to work in spite of the fact it's 50-50.
I would agree with you. I'm like, man, it would be hard to do a 50-50 partner unless you have that high level. I think it worked with my brother because of that.
Yeah.
Because I had such a high level of respect for him.
Yeah.
And I hope he had a little bit of respect for his little bro.
I'm sure he did, man. He was like, hey, come on, let's get this done. You know?
So you mentioned a handful of different businesses. I want to focus on, again, going back to let's leave the material aside. Which of these businesses that you've done have been the most and least fulfilling and why? And if you could talk to it in a lens of somebody trying to start a business or in a business and trying to find like their why other than the material, what would you tell them?
Yeah. So business is really hard, right? It's really, really hard. I don't smoke or drink. And yet there are days that you could have my whole business for $20, a case of beers and a pack of smokes, right? Like the whole thing, just take it all. The key, you get the keys. That's all I'm looking for, right?
We've all been there. I'm like, oh my God, there's been a million. I'm like, I'll pay you if you take my business.
Yeah. Just we're done. And so business is really hard. And so if you think that your only motivation is the dollar number at the end of the tunnel, I promise you that will not survive something. I don't know what the challenge is, but there will be a challenge so big that your motivation for that dollar number will just deplete. It has to be something bigger than that. And like I mentioned earlier, initially, that bigger than that for me was my brother. I wanted to do it for him because he wanted to do it for me. I believed in him. He believed in me. He took a chance on me. We were doing it together. And that was that big motivating factor. In the early days, we used to joke that we weren't in a particular business because we tried so many things. We sold secondhand cars, bounce houses, glow sticks. Like we did so much stuff, right? Some people get the reference, especially those from the UK, but we were like almost like a Del Boy and Rodney, right? Like, which is a very like only fools and horses reference for the UK folks in the UK. But we were really kind of like, just trying everything. And so we didn't get our why so much from the business. we took an external why. Like, I sell pharmaceutical equipment, essentially. And now I found a lot of joy in it. But it's only been quite recently that I've realized what a positive impact we have. Like, 150 million Americans wake up every morning and take a daily med. Right? And my daughter is now one of those. She'll have to take a daily med for the rest of her life, right? And so now I see some good in what I do. But initially, that was never the driving factor. The driving factor was my brother. I just wanted to do anything to do right by him. And I believe he wanted to do anything to do right by me. And that was enough to get us through, like, all of those really difficult sticking moments.
Couldn't agree more. I've said the same thing 1,000 times. Like, if it's money... You'll get crushed and money's not worth it anymore.
Yeah.
So you're just going to give up unless there's something bigger on that. And then the positive impact. My first job, I think, anyways, one of the first ones, pest control door to door. I sold for 2 months, made 20 something grand as a college kid. I'm like, sweet. You know, like,
yep.
I'm sold on this. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never sold, you know. I went and recruited 40 dudes, all of them in college kids in Utah. We all moved to North Carolina. And I was the manager. I've only been doing this for 2 months.
Yeah, right.
I got 40 people. And a lot of, like, how do you sell pest control as a 21-year-old? Like, you can't relate to it, right? You're not passionate about it. And you need that for sales. And what you said, I think, probably can be applied to everything. Like, you just need to look, you need to take a step back and look at the actual impact. So this is what I started selling, you know, pest control on. I mean, training my team on is like, look, if you knock on somebody's door and go to the next door, who wins, right? If you knock on the door and they decide to get pest control, they have unlimited pest control for the year. Our technicians now have jobs which feed their families. They're going to show up in Toyota trucks, right? That the Toyota factory is with Michelin tires. You know, it's like, it's so easy to, and then the pest control pesticides, whatever, they get paid. Everybody gets paid. That's how the economy runs. 21-year-olds could buy that. That's easy to understand. Like, oh, wow, I'm generating, or it's like, okay, you go sell 100 pest control contracts. You're generating $50,000 in revenue into the economy and taxes and all that. So I would challenge anybody to find that, right? If you're not as passionate about whatever you're doing, like, find that. You don't need to go switch what you're doing immediately. Just find the passion in what you're already doing, because I don't know, it's hard to find a product that you can't be creative and like, no, this is the actual impact. I'm impacting so many different people by just doing this one thing. So anyways, I loved what you said about the business being hard. So I have a follow-up question with that, because it is hard. Do you have any philosophies that, you know, when business is getting as hard as it gets, any life philosophies that help you get through those moments?
Yeah. So for me, I just drag it back to perspective, right? Like, I think you can take a look at anything, any point, and you can change your reference point for looking at that moment, that situation, right? Whatever it is. And just the change of the reference point can be enough to change whether or not that thing's a good or a bad thing. You know, every
I lost the respect, unless you're still getting there. Because you said it comes back to respect, right?
No, I think it, sorry, perspective. It comes back to perspective.
I thought you said, I was like, okay, perspective.
No, sorry, 100% dude. On it's with the you. English accent. Yeah, we'll blame it on that.
And we'll maybe, blame it on that. Not
maybe
that
maybe
I
got
don't
a great microphone. But yeah, so for me, it comes back to perspective, right? Like, how do you frame something?
Yep.
How do you frame something? Because every moment in my life, however challenging it has been, has led me to the day that I am at today. And I'm really happy with where I'm at today, which means by the definition, like, every single challenging moment I've had has taught me something, has allowed me to grow, has educated me in a way, you know, like, it all has these inflections on us. And so sometimes when you're in the moment, trying to remind yourself of that, it can be really hard, but it's like super important. Like, hey, I'm losing my CFO, right? Okay, but what are you going to learn from it? What new skill are you going to have? How are you going to understand your business better? What good is going to come out of it? Are we going to get someone better out of the other side of it? If so, how much better is she going to be? What's the business going to do if we get somebody better? Like, could this put the business on a whole different trajectory where we're now able to do twice as well as we thought we were going to do? So you can change that perspective from, oh no, my CEO's imploding, to, oh yes, I'm going to get an amazing new CEO and this is the direction I'm going to take it on and I'm going to understand my business better for it. Now, that in that moment can be really, really hard to do. I think it's a learned skill, right? It's something that you have to, like any other muscle, you just have to practice it. And then also just putting it in perspective of, you know, the big things. Is a family member dead or sick? No. You know, it's just money. Money's replaceable oftentimes, right? I really like that expression. Nothing is quite as good or as bad as you initially think it is. You win that big contract, it's probably not quite as good as you think it is, right? You lose that big contract, it's probably not quite as bad as you think it is, right? So just like taking that moment, changing my perspective, figuring out what good's going to come from it, and then trying to put that moment in perspective of the things that actually matter in life.
Not as good or bad as you think it is. I liked how you phrased that. That's what I've always said. Like that's what separates a normal salesperson from a great salesperson, is when you land the big contracts or you lose the big deals, it's that emotional resilience or, you know, emotional IQ, knowing that don't get your hopes up here. And then I think a lot of that comes back to expectations. Going with something I quote all the time from Buddha, suffering is the desire is the root of all suffering. And then you can replace desire with expectations, right? And it's like, if I can have more loose expectations, that it's not that this is my CFO forever. It's my CFO as long as it works out. And then when they quit, it's the next thing, right? But that the expectation is a little bit more loose. Because when I hear perspective, I kind of, in my mind, I'm translating it. You're having a different perspective, and those two perspectives are loosening expectations and gratitude. Little accurate there.
Have you read that book by Mo Gawat, Design for Happy?
No, but I'm gonna write it down.
Oh dude, I think you'd really appreciate that book. So it was he was like high up in Google X, you know, their like moonshot project division. Yeah. And he lost his son passed away, and he really talks about happiness from like an engineer's perspective. So engineers think in like a really unique way, especially coders, right? But this book, Design for Happy, is just so good. And something you said a moment ago really made me think of it. He says in his book, happiness is expectations plus or minus reality.
Yeah.
Which I super like that. I super like that kind of thing. And it's the same thing, isn't it?
A lot of people are attributing the social media or the mental health crisis to social media because, yeah, your emotional state is a result of your expectations versus expectations versus reality. And social media is raising that. I need to be on the private jet. You know, I need to do this. I need to do that. When your reality stays the same. And then anyways, for me personally, looking into it, I've identified that, and I would agree that that's the number one cause for, you know, sadness, depression, anxiety, is that gap between expectation and reality.
Definitely. And I think social media exacerbates that. It's one of the reasons why I'm not on it. If you have 300 friends and each of them post one great day a year, like them on a beach in Hawaii with their loved ones or whatever, right? That means that every day you see somebody's best life, pretty much, right? But the reality is, you're not always going to have, every day is not always going to be a best life. Sometimes your kid's just going to be sick, right? And screaming in your face, right? Like that's just part of the journey that we go on. And so, but they don't post that on Instagram. Like, hey, this is my kid yelling at me. This is me in a really bad parenting moment. But we all have them and they all exist. I'm assuming quite a few entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs are going to be listening to this podcast. So like, there's a message that I would have for them as well, right? There's a certain thing. I've seen a lot of people around business, right? A lot of smart people, a lot of people who have worked really, really hard, and they just haven't had that certain amount of luck for their business idea to get traction and get off the floor. You know, and I think it's really important if you're an entrepreneur that you understand you've got to work really hard and get lucky and catch a wave. right? Like, it won't always happen for everybody. And I think a lot of people, they can tie their self-worth to their success as well. And then if it doesn't come to fruition, they beat on themselves a lot. And sometimes there might be space for that, right? But we also need to leave a little bit of space for this idea didn't just connect. But don't give up. Keep out there. Keep working hard. You know, keep paddling. And you might catch the next wave. But, like, not everyone will.
And timing is, I mean, catching the wave, you have to hit the timing right. And who knows what the timing is? You just get into business. It's like trying to predict the stock market, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no traders are outperforming the market, you know? But they're trying every single day. But it's, anyways.
Mm.
I was going to ask, and you kind of already answered it, but the last question would be any advice that you have to these, anybody looking at starting business or currently in business getting their butt kicked? It's been a hard year.
If you're currently in business getting your butt kicked, don't worry. We've all been there. Right. Welcome to the arena. Like, you'll be fine. If you're thinking about getting into the arena, really make sure that you want it. You know, I think, again, we in America, we have an idealization of entrepreneurs. There's like this idealization. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily have to be for everybody. It is a great journey. Like, I've really enjoyed it. I would really recommend it to the right people. I think some people flourish in this environment. I used to think that everybody should be an entrepreneur because I was one. I was a young entrepreneur. This is great. Why doesn't everybody do this, right? Yeah. I was looking around me. I think as I've matured a little bit as well, I'm now a little bit more like, hey, this journey isn't for everyone. And that's okay. That does it doesn't make you a good or a bad person. It doesn't make you right or wrong. You know, it's just a thing. Like, being an entrepreneur is a really tough gig. It's highly rewarding, but really know that you want it and not want it for the $1 million paycheck at the end or the $10 million paycheck at the end. Want it for something else.
Well, I love that. I appreciate everything you shared. This has been great.
Bennett, it's great to meet you, dude.
Yeah. Where's the best place for people to connect with you?
Like I said earlier, I don't really have social media, but the marketing team told me that I needed a LinkedIn. Told me I wasn't allowed to not have one. So I do have a LinkedIn account. You can connect with me there. I do answer messages on it. And this is a genuine offer, actually. I will pay it forward if anybody, because so many people have paid it forward to me. Like, I've had so many coaches and mentors over the years. I certainly haven't achieved all of this myself. There's been a lot thrown into me. So if there are any people out there that just want to connect, have a conversation, get some feedback, advice, thoughts on a situation, see if they can learn from some of my battle scars, I'd be happy to answer any questions or connect with anybody on LinkedIn.
Such a valuable offer. I mean, I agree with you. Nobody gets to where they're at without the help. So you could try to do it by yourself and then make a ton of mistakes and then go ask for help.
Yeah.
Or to say, I mean, one of the best pieces of advice that I received was, when you have an idea, tell any and everybody it. Don't worry about people like stealing your idea. Anyways, if somebody is successful in business offering, hey, I'll jump on a call and just be a sounding board, man, what a great offer. So
yeah,
Alistair, I really appreciate that. And
no worries,
dude. Well, Alistair, I appreciate everything that you shared with us. Thanks for coming.